I want to start out by saying that I can't tell you how great it has been to be here with you today, to have a little bit of time to talk about EPA programs and priorities, particularly around nutrient-related issues, but also to learn so much about what's going on in the field, in communities, the conservation work that is happening in the communities that we visited and the folks that we visited this morning. I'm so excited about this afternoon and being able to learn even more. There are four people from US EPA headquarters and the Region 5 office here with us today, and I want to extend an open invitation to anyone here to come up to us, tell us what you think, let us know what we can do to help. And there's an old joke about people from Washington coming to help. usually they're not really there to help. They're there to tell you what to do or how to do it. And they're very well-meaning, typically, but often not really on target. So I've got Tom Davenport from Region 5 with me. If you could stand up, Tom, to sort of let people know where you are. I've got Katie Flahive from headquarters and also Roberta Perry from headquarters. And where's Roberta? There she is, over there. So please feel free to engage us in conversation and dialogue. I'm here to tell you that we really do get it at EPA with regard to where real problem solving occurs around non-point source water quality issues involving nutrients. We really get it. It starts locally. It starts in watersheds through partnerships with local producers, local ag researchers, organizations like CTIC coming into an area and helping people convene and get together and engage, NGOs, local conservation districts, NRCS, huge and positive influence in bringing people together at a watershed level, and other stakeholders that basically care about water quality in a community and want to take on the challenging job of figuring out how to best approach water quality improvements and the protection of high-quality waters. It is helped by agencies like USDA and EPA, as well as Illinois EPA, when we provide seed money to help people bring people together and to kickstart the process of problem solving within a community. It's also helped by regulators who listen to the people who are closest to the problem as they encounter problems and barriers in trying to make progress. You know, there are times when federal regulations and state regulations are conflicting, and it does create sometimes barriers to folks who really want to make meaningful progress in addressing the nutrient water quality issue. Let's just talk about that as one example. It's really important for us as regulators to listen to the folks that are closest to the ground as you encounter barriers so that we can, in fact, work on trying to resolve those barriers and overcome those barriers. It's also helped these advancements by rewarding folks that take the initiative and make a difference, and also spreading the word, communicating, making information more readily available, databases, websites that are easy to access and easy to navigate, information that is easy to access. We're not going to solve our problems as a nation associated with protecting high-quality waters, threatened waters, and impaired waters from nutrient-related pollution without effective partnerships at the local level. It's very clear that there's enough variability on the ground, soil type, hydrology, climate and crop pressures, that decisions and problem solving is going to be most effective at that local level. We understand at EPA that there is no one-size-fits-all answer to the nutrient-related water quality issues that we confront as a nation. There's no magic pill that's going to reverse damage quickly, and it's going to take a lot of hard work at a watershed level involving people who really care about making a difference to actually turn a problem into a solution. We have about 45% nationally of our lakes, rivers, streams, and creeks that have already been assessed to determine whether or not they meet water quality standards or not. And we know based on only 45% being assessed, that we have right now over 15,000 waters that are listed nationally as being impaired due to nutrient-related impacts. These are impairments that are associated with dissolved oxygen levels, not where they're supposed to be, eutrophication, sometimes elevated phosphorus, sometimes elevated nitrogen levels. Increasingly, we're seeing in our groundwater, drinking water facilities that rely on groundwater, MCL levels being exceeded. I saw a statistic that indicated that over a 10-year period of time, in the recent past, we see a doubling of MCL, maximum contaminant level violations for nitrates in groundwater. Drinking water treatment facilities increasingly are having to deal with incoming water that has elevated nutrient levels and elevated levels of organic matter, which, when disinfection comes into play, can create disinfection byproducts that sometimes have some serious potential human health consequences. We're seeing hypoxic zones in inland waters as well as our coastal waters increasing every year. We're seeing more algal blooms, and we're seeing more hazardous algal blooms. These are algae that release toxins that can be neurotoxic to both pets, domestic animals, as well as humans. And recently, out in Washington State, Department of Ecology published a report suggesting that nutrient levels may also be contributing to near-coastal water ocean acidification. So I think most people recognize, and I think we collectively recognize, that we need to do better, that nutrient pollution is really a nationwide problem. There are very few states in the union that don't have at least one, and many have many waters that have been identified as impaired for nutrient-related pollution. That's why EPA's Office of Water considers nutrient-related pollution to be among its highest priorities as we try to address non-point source-related pollution. We really think that the best approach is to do what we can do to empower states and the people closest to the problem to work on solving the problem and on coming up with the solutions on a watershed basis. We're doing a number of things at EPA to try to advance that basic philosophy of saying people closest to the problem are in the best position to help solve the problem. First, we are encouraging states to develop what we're calling nutrient reduction frameworks. Back in March of 2011, EPA sort of pivoted from a very strong emphasis on a more of a regulatory approach, pushing states to get numeric water quality standards in place into their water quality regulations. We pivoted a little bit. We said, listen, we understand that that is a very difficult process, that it's a lengthy process, that there's a lot of variability in what is a unacceptable level or unacceptable levels of nitrogen or phosphorus in a particular water, and that you're going to need more time to get it right. However, in the meantime, what we want you to do is use the available information that you have and begin to develop strategies and approaches proposals for how you're going to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus loading while you work on, over the longer term, to put numeric water quality standards in place. So that's an important shift that EPA made roughly 2 years or so ago. States are identifying priority watersheds. They're working with their local districts to understand where the most significant nutrient-related problems are. They're trying to figure out what makes sense in terms of what can be achieved, and they're working on the ground to try to move forward and make some progress in reducing those loadings. We're also working in close collaboration with state water quality agencies, as well as associations of water quality agencies like AQUA, to identify barriers to states moving forward and to communities moving forward at the watershed level to make progress. We want to identify options and alternatives within the existing framework of our regulations, increasing the amount of flexibility that we have shown in the past to try to make the whole process and work better for those people who are trying to move forward and trying to make a difference in improving the state of our waters in relation to nutrient pollution. I think you're going to continue to see over the next several years, EPA trying to assert as much flexibility as we can with the goal of being seeing more on-the-ground progress being made in reducing nitrogen and phosphorus loadings to our surface water systems. The third thing we're doing is working, and this is a fantastic thing, and I've been with EPA for 35 years, with Office of Water now for going on 11 years, and I have never seen such a fabulous relationship between EPA and USDA's NRCS. We are working so much better together than we have ever in our history, at least in my history at EPA. We're working with NRCS and the Mississippi River Basin Initiative. We're working in the Gulf with them on the Gulf of Mexico Initiative and in the Great Lakes, in the Chesapeake Bay. And most recently, we launched over the last couple of years, USDA is being on the front end of this, the National Water Quality Initiative, which is all about identifying high priority watersheds, 1 to 3 of these watersheds per state across the nation, where USDA and EPA and local stakeholders, producers, conservation districts, et cetera, are all trying to work together to, on the ground, make differences, measure those differences, report out the differences in terms of improvements in water quality from nutrient-related pollution, and spread that around further within the counties and the states. We have identified 160 or so watersheds already nationally. That program provides, I think in 2012, it was around $30 million for those 150 or so watersheds. So my good news is all over the country, these watersheds are being identified, and the kinds of things that we saw in the Indian Creek Watershed Project are starting to grow all over the country as communities, as people get together and try to figure out what they can do to help solve the problem while still maintaining agricultural productivity. Critically important. The fourth thing that we have done most recently is to try to revise our non-point source 319 program a little bit. Some of the money that has been provided historically to help kick off some efforts around nutrient-related management at a watershed level have gotten seed money from the 319 program. And we think that's a great program, and we've been running it now for over 10 years. Originally, it was over $200 million that we distributed to the states for non-point source pollution control, which is what nutrient-related pollution coming from agricultural practices is categorized as. There's been a lot of good work that's occurred out in the field using those monies, but there has been increased pressure, as we all know, on federal dollars and an increased interest on the part of the Office of Management and Budget and seeing more quantifiable results for the use of those funds. So we did a few things over the past year to increase the emphasis on 319 money being used for on-the-ground project implementation over I call it nebulous use of the funding to support, general communication and outreach kinds of activities. So we expect to see a larger percentage of the $319 dollars going to actual project implementation on the ground projects over the next several years as those changes become, implemented as part of that 319 program. We do have many 319 projects. I think there are over 400 of those that we consider to be really good case studies, success stories. That information is available, and many of those case studies do involve, again, multi-stakeholder groups coming together on a watershed level, using the 319 money, making a difference, and showing some incremental progress in terms of water quality improvements for the use of those funds. Those case studies, those success stories, are again another important communication tool as we try to engage folks in watersheds across the country that have nutrient-related issues to try to make some progress and make some inroads. We also have a re-energized Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force. Many of you may be familiar with that. With that group. It's been in existence for at least a decade and a half or so. This is a collection of federal and state folks who are trying to sort of come up with a coordinated strategy and action plan for reducing the size of the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Main stem states from the Mississippi River are committed to provide nutrient reduction strategies by the end of this year to the middle of next calendar year. So we'll be in a much better place with that re-energized task force in the upcoming 6 to 9 months than we have been previously with state-specific nutrient reduction strategies that involve a lot of, again, multi-stakeholder input, coordination, land-grant university input at the state level. In addition to those activities, the other thing that we have been doing is trying to more broadly communicate to the public what the nature of the nutrient-related problem is. What the sources are of nutrient pollution in a watershed is not always an issue of, and frequently isn't an issue of, oh, it's always agriculture. There are turf uses. There are also, POTWs, wastewater treatment plants, that sometimes release large quantities of nutrients into waterways. So part of our effort is to make available public communication and outreach tools that help the general public understand what nutrient pollution causes, what the sources are, and what people are doing in communities and in state and local areas to reduce the impact of nutrient pollution on water quality. We are always looking for additional opportunities to bring our communication folks together with others who have good ideas for how to more effectively communicate, and I extend an open offer to partner with anyone who's interested in working with us to help the general public better understand the nature of the problem, the challenges, what's happening, and what we can expect to happen over the next several decades as we try to deal with the nutrient-related pollution issues. Our emphasis at EPA is basically on trying to do what we can do to help states and local communities and watershed groups solve the nutrient problems that they have in their particular communities. I am really looking forward to further discussions with CTIC about potential partnership opportunities that we can engage in with CTIC to build these local watershed multi-stakeholder groups to problem solve and to test out methods for better managing nutrient-related pollution. I'm looking forward to continuing our improved relationship with NRCS and to continue to reach even higher levels of cooperation and collaboration and understanding between EPA and USDA with regard to our mission and our purpose, making sure that we're working together on common goals. And finally, I'm really looking forward to learning more this afternoon. This morning has just been fabulous for me. The amount of information, the quality of information, the seeing how real-time science is being incorporated into agronomic practices on the farm, how farmers and producers are willing to take some risks and make some investments with a little bit of help from other entities to get things moving. It's just inspiring. And I've always felt that that farmers are great problem solvers and they are great stewards. And if we can figure out how to best work together, that we can make enormous progress together. So I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank the organizers and the sponsors of this tour for all the work that went into this. It's been incredibly fulfilling for me and informative for me, and I really appreciate it. I want to thank you for all the conservation work that you're doing and for being willing to talk about it and spread the word. Thank you very much.